Jim Chapman usually filling that center seat. I'm Dawn Kelly, and I'm sitting in for him today. So that is the position I have assumed here. On the left this morning, the Reverend Susan Eagle. We welcome her to the program. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning.
And on the right, as usual, Bob Metz. No pinch hitter for you this morning.
No pinch hitter, no.
You're the only regular this morning. The issue we're going to be talking about today is healthcare cuts. We're going to be talking about, I'm sure, the stories that you have heard, watched, and read in the media about this chronic shortage of intensive care unit beds in our city, both last week and this week. And certainly the stories this morning in the media were all focusing on the budget deficit situations in our hospitals. London Health Sciences Center, they haven't issued a direct figure yet, but they're saying that they're running a deficit of several million dollars. The St. Thomas Elgin General Hospital, a $2 million deficit this year. That's on top of the $2 million deficit last year. St. Joe's not faring any better. They have a $1 million-plus deficit that they're running as well. They all want action from the health minister. This takes us right back to our primary question that we're going to be discussing first off the bat this morning, lady and gentleman, and that is, what is the proper role of government in delivering health care? Should we expect the government to come running to the help of the hospitals in these situations? Leading off from the left, we will go to Susan Eagle.
Well, of course, the government has a responsibility for the providing of health care. If you have any vision of a healthy community, you know that proper health care is a fundamental basic service that's got to be provided to keep the community healthy and to keep the country healthy. But more than that, Canada has made a commitment to health care. Our Constitution Act includes a reference to public services of reasonable quality for all Canadians. We've signed international covenants, the Human Rights Declaration, in which we say that we are committed to providing medical care and necessary social services, and also other international covenants that we've signed, which where we also spell out our obligation and commitment to providing health care. So it's not just should we or shouldn't we. We've committed ourselves to it.
But Bob Metz, what are the Tories doing to us then? They're the antithesis, I guess we call it, of this.
The Tories aren't doing anything different to us than Bob Rae would have done to us or the Liberals would have done to us. What we're seeing today is the inevitable result of a robbing Peter to pay Paul social health care system. It can't work that way. I agree that the government has assumed a certain level of responsibility and put us in a big mess, but we have to go back to the days when the government brought in, particularly in Ontario, what was once called the OHIP plan, the Ontario Health Insurance Plan. This plan was a fraud from the very beginning. It didn't have anything to do about health. You know, premiums only covered 12% of the costs. It wasn't about insurance, because it wasn't actuarially sound, and there was no investment being made for future expected expenses, and there was no plan. There was no real plan in terms of investing money, in terms of making sure we had a pool of funds available to meet the emergencies for which insurance is normally the avenue we turn to do that kind of a thing. So naturally, most of our health care expenses were being paid for by taxes. We placed a universal system up, set up a universal system so that health care is available to everyone, free of charge, rich or poor, doesn't matter who you are. This is not a system that's designed to help the people who cannot help themselves. This is a plan where everybody's in the safety net and nobody's holding it up. So it's natural that the safety net's going to rip.
What's wrong with the safety net, though?
Well, yeah, I'm having a little trouble with that, too. I don't mind having a debate with, you know, and identifying left and right on a lot of issues ideologically, but when you get to health care, it seems to me that there ought to be an absolute commitment from everybody that we need to have proper health care for everybody in the country. We know that when we move away from universality on programs, that very often we move to two kinds of delivery systems that segregate out people according to the money they've got. So I wouldn't support that. Well, because I think every Canadian is entitled to the same quality of health care as every other Canadian. I don't think it should be based on who's got more money.
So you don't think they should have a choice? Like in 1968 when they brought OHIP in, 82% of Ontarians already had private health insurance. Why did we have to make their insurance plans illegal, force them to get on to a government health insurance plan? Why didn't we just take care of the 18% that didn't have insurance?
Well, first of all, where they've moved to private health care or have private health care in the states are actually looking at the Canadian health care plan as being something that's more efficient and cheaper and provides better health care than what they have in the States.
Well, I don't think that's the impetus for the American look at the Canadian system. I think there's a lot of political posturing there, and it's an easy system to get votes on. It doesn't work. It doesn't work any better here than it didn't work in any other country.
I'm not going to suggest that I don't think there's room for improvements in our health care system. Of course there is. But you only have to look at a book that was put out just last year by the seniors, Canadian seniors, called Life Before Medicare. And it just tells absolute horror stories of what's gone on before people had health care and the absolute impoverishment of people because there was some kind of medical crisis in the family.
Well, no, you mean before people had insurance, not before people had health care. And again, it begs the question, why don't we just help the people who didn't have that insurance? You can give me all the horror stories in the world, and I would be happy if government just dealt with the horror stories, but it's not.
I guess, Bob, I need to tackle you on this because I'm, and it sounds like Susan shares my concern that these people, okay, the 72% who did have health insurance, private health insurance, 82%, who's to say that they had access to equal quality health care? There would be some insurance plans that would be better than others. Now, under this system, everybody's equal.
And let's add in there, too, the fact that when you create unhealthy people, you create an expense down the line that is absolutely monumental. We're not just talking about...
Well, then how do you explain the monumental expense we have now? Because we took the opposite course. We put in an instituted the very system that you're advocating, and here we are with debts piling up, deficits piling up, no place to
get
the money from.
I don't know what debts and deficits you're talking about. The federal government has come out and said that they're about to have a clean slate very, very shortly.
That's not true.
And also, when you look at the percentage of money that is being spent on social programs as a percentage of our budget, it's not increased over the years at all. There's been a lot of other stuff that's been going on, but in terms of our social programs, we're not spending more.
But
we're still spending the same percentage.
This is part of the problem with having the government paying for our health care. It is precisely because...
No, we're paying for our health care.
Well,
government
absolutely.
Is us. And if we decide
so
that we want to
So why do we need
put,
a middle party? Why don't we just pay for our own health care?
Because you can't have equality of health service when you do it that way, and also when it's done individualistically like that, it turns out that it's more expensive. But government's
well,
us.
No, it's
we
not
decide
like
that we want tax dollars spent so that we can have a healthy community. Once you get away from that and you get into spread of disease or uncontrollable health problems, boy, you've got a much bigger debt to incurred than you do
if equality is the objective,
providing public health care.
If equality is the objective, then why not just pass a law, say like they do for car insurance or something, and just pass a law privately forcing people to get private insurance to cover all their health care needs, including first dollar walk in the door, first dollar coverage,
because I
no
think
deductible.
We've got a better system. We've got a better system, and
well,
like I said, the Americans
better?
Are looking at our system as being an improvement on their own.
Then how do you explain the deficits? How do you explain the beds being closed? This is a better
system? The government
system?
Is cutting back on the money that's going into the health care that we need to have. That's how I explain it.
Lady and gentlemen, we're gonna take time out here.
Okay.
We're into a good debate. We're going to continue it. We're going to have some callers join us. 643-1290 is the number if you would like to talk to Reverend Susan Eagle on the left today, Bob Metz on the right. This is Left, Right, Center, and this is Talk of the Town. Joining me in the studio for Left, Right, Center this morning, representing the left, the Reverend Susan Eagle, and on the right, as usual, Bob Metz. We are talking about health care, and we are going to take some calls. So 643-1290 is the number. And Ruth joins us this morning. Good morning, Ruth.
Good morning, Dawn, and greetings to your guests.
Good morning,
Ruth. I'm phoning to make the point to Susan Eagle and to get her comment on this. I feel that there's a lot of angst or anger, I guess, with the intensive care bed situation and the cutbacks and so on, and that this is being foisted on the back of the Harris Tories, and they're getting the blame for it. I want to make the point that it's the federal cutbacks that caused this funding shortage in the hospital area, that the provincial Tories have actually increased spending over their mandate. And, you know, I took Susan Eagle's point that we have a constitutional right to basic health care, and yes, that could be a standard health care right across Canada, no problem with that. But individually, at the provincial level, we have control over it too. So, but anyway, my main point is, would you please comment on the funding model that we have at present, and please put the blame where it belongs.
Ruth, thanks for your comments. At this point, I hadn't named any government as being a culprit. In fact, as far as I'm concerned, they're all culprits. We've been watching with some concern for a while the cutbacks in transfer payments to provinces. We've had dialogue with the federal government as well as with the province. But I'm not prepared to let the province off the hook either, because the provinces have also, I don't think they have lobbied hard enough around the cutbacks in the transfer payments. And secondly, I think they have continued or perpetuated some of those cutbacks. So as far as I'm concerned, both parties have some accountability to us. And the bottom line is that there's a whole lot of vulnerable people at the receiving end that find themselves in trouble when this kind of thing happens.
Well, I totally agree about vulnerable people at the other end of it. But in the comment that you've just made, you've equalized the responsibility between the federal and the Tories. And that's the point of view I don't agree with, and I want to be really clear about, that the provincial Tories have increased funding to health care, as opposed to the federal Tories, who have cut it back so drastically that hospitals find themselves scrambling all over the place. And I hope now that the vocal left, of which I think you are a member, will go after the federal level of funding and see to it that blame is assigned where financially it belongs.
Ruth, the only reason I am implicating the provincial government as well as the federal government is that I've also looked at the breakdown of what's happening budget-wise provincially, and there are some things that used to be in the Ministry of Community and Social Services that got dumped over into the Ministry of Health. So while they said they were increasing the Ministry of Health, they were also increasing the responsibility and some of the programs. And I don't think the general public is aware of the stuff that's been shifted over there, which has just put increased pressure on those budget dollars. So I really encourage you to take a look at both the federal alternative budget and also the Ontario alternative budget, which helps to break down some of the things that are going on that I don't think are making it out into the general media areas and getting out to the public.
Okay, Susan, now one last point. I take your point that the provincial Tories would be looking at the whole hospital setup anyway, just as to fulfill their basic mandate to get things sorted out. But in fact, it seems quite outrageous to me that a hospital bureaucrat at the top of the heap would be, I'm talking about hospital administrators at the head of hospitals, would be making something in excess of $300,000 per year. And this is for bureaucratic functions. I cannot see why all this money is going into bureaucracy and administration at the expense of the quality of health care.
Well, Ruth, I think that's to make sure that everybody gets an equal share of the health care. It's the very thing that the system is built around. You know, the reason I'm so terrified of the very idea of government supplying our health care services is because they've made the same commitment to health care, where they tell you it's a right and everyone has an equal right to it. They've made that same commitment to other things too, including education and welfare and very many other issues to which the government is equally committed. And the problem is there's no limit set to this commitment. You know, need is is a never-ending thing. And the problem is when you have something that's free, the demand for that service is going to be infinite and you can never meet it.
Okay,
Ruth, one more thing. If we move to private health care, as Robert is suggesting here, I don't agree with people at the top end getting a lot of big bucks out of the system. But I do know that when it's a public system, you get to have more say around what happens and where the spending is than if it moves to a private system. And I've seen of the private system, people sitting at the top of private systems are usually making a heck of a lot more than any money we have been going out to people in the public system.
What say do you have right now about where the money is spent in health care? What say do you have right now as an individual?
I think we have a lot to say.
Well, can you give me an example? Is there anything you can choose? Is there anything you can pick? Can you pick your insurance premium? Can you go shopping for a better deal for a lower price? Can you choose your doctor freely? Is he free to give you the medicines he wants to give you? I mean, what say do you really have? What isn't regulated in, under this kind of a system?
I think we've got a lot more say than we have in a private system, and I think you only need to experience some of the horror stories that are coming out of those systems to know we're better off. I'm not saying our system's perfect, but I think we have a lot more choice than we realize we have. We also have a lot more opportunity for public dialogue and debate, which we often don't bother with. Elections come and people don't bother to vote. There's an opportunity for public hearings. People don't bother to speak at them.
Well, we're in the middle of a dialogue and a debate now, and I appreciate your saying that the system can be fixed, but I don't think you do appreciate where I'm coming from. I'm saying that this system
I hope
deadly.
I never appreciate where you're coming from.
Well, you don't have to agree with it, but I hope you understand I'm not just saying the system needs to be fixed. I'm saying it needs to be overhauled. I'm saying that the system we have now is actually destroying our health care. I mean, socialized health care is a system where you you get what you don't pay for, and you pay for what you don't get. And it's a never-ending, endless demand upon our resources, and there's no way to slow it down.
I want to pin you down here just for a little bit of clarification, because you keep talking about a private system, and I guess I, for one, don't understand how it would be better than what we have now. What would we experience under a private system that isn't happening today?
Choice, flexibility,
choice
lower
in
prices.
What? Choice in what?
Choice of insurance company, choice of doctor, choice of hospital, choice of treatment.
Okay, but how's private insurance going to give me a choice of doctors that I don't have today? I have a choice to go to whatever doctor I want.
You would under private insurance as well. But you don't have a choice to go to whatever doctor you want. Even today, that's being restricted more and more. Doctors are being told where they can practice, where they have to start.
But I do, as a fairly new citizen to this, new citizen to the city of London. Mm-hmm. When I moved to town here 4 years ago, I could choose whatever doctor I wanted to go to.
Sure, and you didn't have to pay for it. And now look at what's happening. The doctors are leaving. The beds are closing.
But I'm still free to switch doctors if I want.
Well, for a while. And as long as there's still doctors around to work in a system that's slowly going bankrupt, but you'll soon see that they're all going to start demanding user fees. They're going to start demanding separate premiums. They'll want to be separate from the OHIP or the government health care system as it slowly crumbles and can no longer meet the needs. You'll also find the government starting to cut back on the kinds of procedures it'll cover.
But is this mismanagement? Is this a management problem, or is this a philosophical problem?
It's the same thing. It's the same thing.
No, it's not.
If you want anything to survive economically, it must be able to sustain itself. The money has to come from the system itself. We actually have laws in this country that prevent people from paying for their own health care, so that we have to take money from another person unnecessarily, and thereby deplete the resources we would have to help those people who cannot help themselves. I don't believe in this whole equality philosophy. I think it's destructive. People don't need equal service. They don't need equal things. They should be able to choose. Some people need more. And the people in the greatest need are the ones hurt most by this egalitarian philosophy.
Okay,
unfortunately, you're living in a country where we consider that equality is a virtue, and it's something that we're committed to constitutionally.
Equality before the law, yes.
But
and I've always spoken of equality before the law, but equality of social benefits and equality of income and equality of talent and equality of everything else, no. We're individuals. That's the very thing we're not about. We're into being individually different and individually needing different things.
Well, healthcare is about equality of access, and it's not about equality of talent or equality of income. And you've just pointed out that it's not about equality of income, but it is about equality of access.
Yes, and all you really need to have is money.
And I think that is really, really critical, and I would like to see us upholding that principle.
We're talking this morning about the issue of health care. We're on Left, Right, and Center. This is Talk of the Town on 1290 CJBK. My guests in the studio for the right, Robert Metz, and for the left, Reverend Susan Eagle. We thank Ruth for her call. We'll move on to Herman. Good morning, Herman.
Hi. It's amazing how Susan Eagle and Jeffrey Schlemmer get me a foot off the ground all the time. But anyway, since Susan Eagle's there, Jeffrey must be looking after the 10th city in Victoria Park. But anyway... I called when Susan made the comment, general public isn't aware. The general public is aware, Susan, and that is why Mr. Harris's government is in Toronto. It's because the general public is aware.
My reference to the general public being aware was that I thought the general public was not aware of some of the shifts in funding that had gone from ComSoc over to the Ministry of Health. I'm really pleased if you are aware of that, because last I talked to some of the elected MPPs, they weren't aware of that. So that was the reference. It was a specific reference I was making. As to the public's general awareness, I couldn't gauge the public's general awareness around a lot of issues. Certainly, I hear things that I know are true and things that I have trouble believing, and I think we're probably all in that state when we're trying to discern the truth from what we get from all the various sources that we get information.
And all things being equal to all people, we see where that led a few of the countries in the past, and I am not for that at all.
Herman, you don't have a problem with the idea of everyone having their own private health insurance?
No, I grew up that way. That's when I started working back in the 50s. We paid our own premiums. The company, in fact, when I worked for it, paid half the premium, and I paid the other half.
Well, what if you'd had to pay the whole thing, and what if there'd been a crisis in your family and there'd been huge medical costs?
Whoa, crisis in the family. I had four kids born, and none of them, it didn't cost me a nickel for any of them. Not a nickel for a doctor, not a nickel for the hospital, nothing. But now it's costing me a bundle because the government is going into a deficit, into a debt. And then the government has the nerve to say, oh, the deficit is cleared up, so we're going to start spending money again. What about debt?
Okay, now hold on here, because you're talking a couple of different levels of government at once, I sense
that's
here.
That's very funny. I was watching both Susan and yourself, you know, having this confused look on your face when Herman was making this point. It's like the both of you don't seem to understand that there's a connection between taxes and government deficits and government debts and the money that they spend on health care. Like, you seem to want to totally throw that connection aside as though it doesn't exist.
No, you're being too simplistic, I think. I think we understand clearly the relationship. I'm just not understanding where Herman's coming from, because he seems to be lumping together and confusing several levels of government in what he was saying. Herman, well, straighten us out here.
No, like, to what extent? No, the point is that I think the government should get out of a lot of things that they're into, and let the private people do it. Let me buy my own insurance. I buy my own car insurance, like was mentioned before.
Right.
And I'd like to buy my own insurance. Just give me back $30 or $40 or $100, whatever it's costing me on my insurance or on my taxes to pay for this health care system. And I'll buy my own life, my own insurance. And those people that cannot, that have not, I haven't got any problem in helping them out at all.
Okay.
But, exactly.
But I would like the government to get out of this because of the fact that they mismanage things. And if they went to see the financial advisors that I went to see, they would tell them to get their credit cards paid off because it's costing them too much money.
Okay. Herman, thanks a lot for clarifying.
Thank you.
Okay. We have to take another commercial break. This is Talk of the Town on 1290 CJBK. Yes, that was a relative kind of comment, wasn't it? On the left today, Reverend Susan Eagle. She is subbing for Jeffrey Schlemmer, who is usually sitting in that seat. And on the right, Robert Metz. So we are talking about health care this morning, and Ian joins us next. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning. Mr. Metz and Herman can move down to Killsville, Texas. But see, we're not Americans. And most of the industrialized world has a health care system that's subsidized by the government.
Yes.
I don't want to go in that direction.
Ian. I'm just saying that if you want to be on a government health care system, I think you should have a choice.
I'd like to hear the rest of what Ian has to say.
Well, I'm just dealing with his points as he goes along, point by point. I mean, he's already asked me to leave the country as though that is a solution to his problem. I always find it interesting that people who disagree with something in a way of trying to deal with that problem, you know, I should move to the United States. I'm not advocating an American system. I never said I was. I'm advocating a free market system, which the American system is far from. It was once more free market. It's getting more like ours, and it's having more problems as a result. The reason that the Americans are looking at the Canadian system is political, not because they want to have a better health care system. They won't, of course, they justify it with that, but they're not going to get that. they're going to get the same result that every other country did. And every other country that got into socialized medicine has pulled back from it.
Ian, do you believe this?
No. And I have to, there's one other comment that no one's addressed this morning. Okay. Almost every hospital in Ontario has laid off nurses, maintenance staff, but not at one hospital in all of Ontario has a doctor been laid off. With 30% less beds and 30% less nurses and 30%, but not one doctor gets laid off. Why? Because the doctor's union is just too powerful. You can't tell me that they're doing the same amount of work. It's impossible. Why aren't they being laid off? Because their salary...
So you'd rather see more laid off doctors? Am I catching you right?
Well, just a minute. There hasn't been any. That's what I'm saying.
Well, don't you think doctors are the most needed people in the medical field? I mean, isn't that what most people go to see as a doctor? And here you're upset because we're not laying them off?
You're missing my point. If you're a heart specialist and you're used to doing X level of work and you're getting a salary of, say, $200,000 from the hospital, now your work has suddenly been cut by 40%, and you're making the same money, and we're wondering why there's a deficit in the system?
Oh, but Ian, hold on just a second here. You're confusing cuts in nurses and maintenance staff with a drop in patients, and I don't think that's what we're seeing.
No, it's the opposite.
Well, Ian, I want to respond to a couple of things you've said. First of all, as a clergy person, I'm connecting to hospitals very often. One of the things that started to emerge a few years ago was the whole idea of a health team, which would include a holistic health care perspective, which would include the doctor, the nurses, the family, other support people in the community that were connected to the patient to try and move things forward. I don't advocate cutting doctors because we've cut other staff, but I think you are very, very correct in saying that there has been an impact on healthcare with the loss of some of those other people who provide support and do work for people. I talk to staff in hospitals now who are being asked to do jobs that they weren't trained for, or things are being reorganized in such a fashion that it is having an impact. And they're aware of that too, and they're concerned about that. So I think I wouldn't support laying off doctors, but I would so say it has had an impact where there have been cutbacks. I think there was a picture in the paper the other day of a doctor standing beside some empty beds and said, we just don't have the staff right now for us to have patients in these beds. And that, I think, is a tragedy when we have people who are in need in the hospitals. And I'm really also pleased to hear you saying that that you think that we need to have proper health care. I'm glad somebody's finally called in on this show and said that they think that that's incredibly important. I from the statistics I see and the polls I see, most Canadians and Ontarians want to have it, so I don't know where they are today on this program. I didn't realize till I got here today we were going to be talking about health care, or I would have brought some of the stats from the states that have come out that are showing that people are spending, that it's costing more to get less medical service in the states than you get here. And I think it's a system we should be proud of here in spite of the flaws and the problems that we have to work our way through.
I have piles of the same statistics, and they're apples and oranges and peanuts and radishes. You just cannot compare them, and they're including things in the United States that they do not include in our stats here. But a thing that, you know, just to get to the very point here, I don't understand why, whatever you may feel about medicine and how you think it should be delivered, why is there this strong opposition that anyone else should be able to have the choice of how they would like to have their health care delivered, including the insurance options, including the hospital options, doctor options? You seem to have this fixed idea that we have to have an equal egalitarian system. Everyone's got to be forced to pay into it. Now, all I'm asking is, if you believe in this system of yours so strongly and you think it's so good, I have to ask why it isn't a voluntary system and why everyone wouldn't sign up.
Well, I think we have a system in Canada where we pay taxes, and I would like my taxes to be going into social programs.
I would not. So
people are forced
to pay.
You're
not answering the question.
I don't consider that I'm forced to pay taxes. It's an obligation and a responsibility that I have.
And what happens if you choose not to? What happens to you?
I'm not saying I'm forced, Robert. I'm doing it willingly.
Well, you're doing it willingly. That's
I'm doing
fine.
It willingly
what about the person who's not? Let's assume that such a person exists. I'm sure they do.
Well, it's one of the obligations and responsibilities we have as citizens in this country.
So you acknowledge that they're being forced. Then if they don't, where do they end up? They end up in a place called jail, just as they would if they had killed somebody or hurt somebody.
I think you're quibbling
right?
here. What I'm trying to say, if I could get finished without being interrupted, is that it's a responsibility, it is an obligation, but I also think it's a privilege. I think it's a privilege for us to pay taxes. That presumes that we have got something to pay in. I think we need a fairer tax system, yes, but it presumes that we have resources as individuals and citizens in this country that we put in for the improvement and betterment and care of all the our fellow citizens in this country, and I think it's a privilege. I think
it's a privilege to be able to have
a health care system, to have an education system, to have a social service
system.
You're
not answering my question.
I think it's a privilege to be able to have a police force and doctors and nurses and all the other kinds of care providers that we have.
This is all very... Very motherhood stuff.
I mean, I don't see it as being forced at all.
You're not answering a question of how it can be paid for. This is pie in the sky dreaming. This is absolute fantasy what I hear coming from you.
Taxes aren't fantasy. Social services
aren't
fantasy.
They aren't.
And hospital needs aren't fantasy.
Now, you haven't answered my question. Why can't a person like myself
or anyone
else opt out of a particular social program? I'm not saying taxpayer totally. Let's talk about services. Doctors are not a service that used to be provided by government until the late 60s. And since then,
want to opt
problems.
Out of driving down the right side of the road and prefer to drive down the left.
Susan,
I mean,
that's a non sequitur.
Well, it isn't. You're saying you want to have total freedom to do whatever you want. You can't.
Going down the right side of the road is a law we have to protect our life and
so
freedom.
And so are taxes.
No, they're not.
And we're going to thank Ian for his call. We're going to gather our thoughts here, and we're going to be back with Talk of the Town. On the left, the Reverend Susan Eagle joining us this morning and really holding her own. I think you would agree, despite the fact that the poor woman walked in here thinking that we were talking about another topic entirely here. So Bob and I were just saying that she's doing a great job and supporting the left this morning. And we have several other calls that we want to work into the remaining minutes of the program today. So we'll talk to Michael next. Good morning, Michael.
Yes, good morning. It was nice to finally hear the last half of Ian's questions and comments after Mr. Metz's interruptiveness. I've been complaining about his interruptiveness for the last 3 weeks,
well,
in general on the program. Now,
Mr. Metz is enthusiastic, though.
Yeah.
That's not enthusiasm, it's rudeness.
Well,
it is also not standard debate procedure. Now,
okay, now that you've chastised him.
If I may bring up the point that I actually mean to bring up in terms of historical perspective, this whole notion... And it's implicit in a lot of what the right-wing supporters this morning have said, that charities or some other type of organizations will pick up the bills for people who can't afford major hospitalization expenses and so on. It's you know, Mr. Metz is always talking about pie in the sky and fantasy. That's a fantasy. The bottom line in my family...
What's a fantasy? The notion of a charity?
Excuse me.
Well,
it's a point of clarification here. We need to understand exactly what you're talking about.
Okay. In the United States, for example, I've had at least two situations in my own family where both families, my sister and brother-in-law and my father and mother, had top-flight private medical insurance. When all was said and done, both in catastrophic illness situations, they were left holding the bag for 20% of the overall cost that was expected to come out of their financial situations. Neither family was able to afford it. There are hundreds of thousands of similar cases. People are forced into bankruptcy. Lives are ruined because there are no organizations out there who are really in a position or willing to pick up those costs.
If you've been listening to me carefully, I haven't even mentioned charity this morning. I did mention that if the government were going to commit to cover costs like that, those are the very things it would target and zero in on, and not be giving 100% coverage to everybody for free so that there's no money left for the very situation you describe. Now, you know, as I think you were also saying that the notion of charity is implicit in what I say. I do believe in charity rather than force. I think that's a moral issue. I think that people who believe in the initiation of force are immoral by the standard of moral that I practice. Now, as far as my interrupting callers and interrupting people when they speak, I was encouraged to do so when I was brought on the show, because it was part of what makes the show lively. And I think Jim and the station didn't want people to drone on forever with speeches. So just to cover those basic issues. Now, as to the problem you perceive in the healthcare system, I think that what I'm saying would more address the very issue you're complaining about. And I don't see why do you think, for example, that people should be forced to pay into a system? Don't you think there should be some choice and some alternatives?
If I thought that the choice concept would work, I wouldn't have a problem with it. The problem is that that system does exist in the United States, and it doesn't work.
That's fascinating.
I want to jump in here, Michael, first of all, to say thanks for giving an example of what's wrong with the private system that's going on in the States, where people get pulled into something thinking they've got coverage and then discovering after the fact that there's some bills to be paid. So thanks for doing that. But the other thing I want to say is universality, I think, is really critical to providing a public service. And that's the place where I want to really push and support. And I'm going to stop at that, because I don't want to get into any discussions about who's droning on. So
why should a millionaire be able to get free medicine insurance, free medical health care
on the backs of people? If he's paying proper taxes, he's contributing in a portion of his income. If he's not
but nevertheless,
working
you
the
could
system
argue
to
that
his benefit, but if he's paying proper taxes and fair taxes, then he's contributing his fair share into that program, and what he's paying in is covering not only his medical needs, but other people's as well.
Michael, I got three other people waiting, okay?
I'm still really dissatisfied with this interruptiveness. Again, you know, if Mr. Metz would at least listen for the end of a sentence before he leaps in, it would be very helpful.
Okay, thank you for your input today.
Thank you.
Okay, bye. And we'll move along. We'll talk to Diane this morning. Hi, Diane.
Oh, hi, Dawn. It's been at least 7 years since I've had to use the emergency system for our healthcare system, and I was appalled at the, it's really seems to be going down the tube. And the RN that even helped my father while we were there, he was telling us we should be getting letters out to our members of parliament, because starting in November, he's going to be training some people, such as like kitchen staff, people who are maintenance people and that have no previous health care training whatsoever. These people are going to be working in the emergency areas. My father's in a nursing home in London.
Okay, and, Diane, yes. let's just, in the interest, I'm sorry to cut you off, and I don't mean to do that, but I guess let's bring this back to our issue here today.
Yes.
Do you feel that you would have encountered all of these things if you were paying private health care insurance and we weren't dealing with a universal system?
No, I don't think we would, because, it depends, I guess, what's outlined in there, but obviously there's either not enough money or somebody's not taking the money and putting it in the right places. Why are we getting people to look after us, though? Aren't you concerned that you're going to go in there and have somebody who, in 6 or 8 weeks, with some very brief training, could be looking at you before the doctor even gets to see you, and they start, if you're bleeding or something like this, you need care right away, and they don't even know the physiology of the body?
Bob, are you thoroughly convinced that we would not encounter this type of situation if we were in a private healthcare system?
I'm not guaranteeing any kind of medical delivery in terms of a doctor-patient relationship. We're not even talking about that here. All we're talking about is money. Money is the only thing that government can change in the equation, because it has a right to take it from our pockets without our having any say-so in it. So the issue is, how do we get money to the system so that situations like this are less likely to arise? They're not going to be perfect. No system's perfect. I agree with Susan, and that goes for private and for the government health care system. And, I marvel at, for example, the last caller, Michael, who says, you know, if he would be convinced that if freedom of choice worked, he'd be for it. Well, I don't know how much evidence he needs to have put before him that the opposite of freedom of choice doesn't work.
Okay, Susan?
A couple of things. First of all, governments do set standards, and so we're talking about more than money, we're talking about standards. Governments have some control of standards. Again, I'm concerned that as we have cutbacks in money, there is certainly a push downward on standards as people have to deal with expediency kinds of decisions. But believe me, I am absolutely convinced that if we were in a private system, your standards would be far less than we have in a publicly controlled system. So I don't think the answer to standard problems now is to go private. It's rather to put pressure on the government to improve the standards and put the money back into the system where it needs to be. And Diane, thanks for suggesting letters to MPs. We need to get them to MPs and MPPs.
I know the doctors themselves are even advocating this. They told me to make sure that we tell our friends, even that registered nurse, because it's the quality. We do have certain laws. Why are doctors trained for 5 or 6 years? Why are nurses in there for 2 years? And then putting those people in there who you and I don't know what their qualifications are. And if we don't learn to ask the right questions, then a lot of people are going to be suffering because of it.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you, Diane. Okay, bye-bye. We'll move along quickly to Rob. Good morning, Rob.
Hi, Diane. Don, how are you?
Good, thanks.
One thing that you might find interesting, last week, the Minister of Health, Jim Wilson, spoke in my hometown of Ingersoll here. We had about 50 people out. So if there's that concern, why aren't these people out? Like, he spoke, and then, like, it was a question-answer issue.
Maybe it wasn't publicized enough?
No, it was very well publicized.
What do you think is the answer to that?
I don't know. I thought I'd bring this point in. The other thing gets me a little bit, and I certainly agree with this, Mr. Metz.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, I get very much same as you do, sir. Upset with these socialists that feel that they can have a better understanding of how to tell you how to live your life than you actually know how to do it.
That's correct, and that's basically a fundamental tenet of a socialist philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to leave other people alone who don't agree with them. And that's where a big difference is. Whereas those of us who believe in freedom of association believe in the right to disagree in a free society.
And a final point I'd like to make is the fact that whether the delivery form is public or private, I think whichever system can get the maximum number of dollars to the frontline workers, to the people who need the help, that is a system that we should follow.
Okay, thanks a lot for your points
Thank you, Rob. Thanks very much. In fact, the studies show that the public system does get more dollars to the people in need. And again, I didn't bring those studies in with me, but maybe I can send them in to Jim.
That sounds good.
You can pile the studies up, Susan. I got studies back at my office that show exactly the opposite of what you're saying. They compare public hospitals in other countries right beside the private ones. They could be two blocks apart from each other. And the difference in the level of health care is like looking at the difference between East and West Berlin when they used to have the Berlin Wall up. The private health care system has cheap service, excellent service, top-of-the-notch physicians. The public health care system is in the dumps. And it's just the way it is. It's an inevitable thing. Public health care is running on a credit card. The credit card is maxed at the limit. It's time to pay not only our current health care costs, but our past health care costs. So we're in trouble.
We have to scoot for one more brief commercial message, and then we'll be back. We'll talk to Gordon. Jim's trying to squeeze everybody's opinions in and talk the town. Joined this morning on Left, Right, and Center with Reverend Susan Eagle and Robert Metz. And Jim may be our last caller of the day. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. Good morning, Bob. Good morning.
Good morning.
Everybody else. Prior to Medicare, and I believe it was 1963, 95% of Canadians had private health insurance. So the question that I have, that we all have to ask ourselves, is why did the Liberal government, Mr. Pearson, bring in Medicare? Because people's hearts were being replaced, and hospitals were being built, and doctors were being paid, and on, and the healthcare system was very, very good, and people were paying for it out of their own pocket. So you have to ask, what was his agenda in bringing in Medicare? I have my own viewpoint. It opened the door to universality. It opened the door to biculturalism and bilingualism, the whole bit, coast-to-coast bit. As individuals, we have to ask ourselves, where do we want to be on the scale of paying out money? Do I want to give 95 cents out of a dollar, or do I want to give 70 cents, or do I want to give 30 cents? I'm even against the CPP. I can take my 40 bucks a month and invest it more wisely than the government can.
Oh, okay, Jim, we're going to stay a little focused here, though, okay?
And we can do the same thing with health care.
Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to let you go, okay, so you can listen. And we got 2 minutes left in this program, and I'll let each of our guests have a minute, okay?
Okay, thanks, guys.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Okay, who wants to go first?
Well, I think Jim just confirmed what I said at the outset of the show. He went even back a little further. I was in 1968. He says in 63, 95% of people had private health care insurance. The government saw a cash cow and wanted to milk it and get votes at the same time. And they knew that the government was still in pretty good condition at that time. We didn't have deficits. We weren't in the kind of problems we were in today. And that they had counted on a growing population base and a constantly growing prosperity, not recognizing that the prosperity was created by the very thing that something like socialized medicine would destroy. So we input a system that not only failed to deliver and is failing to deliver, but is hurting its ability.
I want to jump in here.
Go right ahead.
We have...
You get the final interruption.
The final word today.
First of all, I don't know many governments that do things they're not pushed into. I don't believe that the whole system was so perfect that the government had to get in and get into public health care, that there were no problems. There were problems. And again, I invite people to pick up the book called Life Before Medicare, which is written by our seniors, a Canadian seniors group that put it out, and boy oh boy, it talks about a whole host of problems. I think too, the government was looking at the cost down the road of health care and knowing that we were going to have increasing gaps between those who could afford it and those who couldn't. I'm really, really grateful we have a public health care system, and I sure hope there's some people out there listening who know how valuable it is and start calling in and also calling their elected officials and telling them that.
A quick word, yes and no, maybe, on are we going to see some improvements in the healthcare system here in Ontario, Bob?
I think we're going to see some Band-Aids on the system for a while, but the old problems will come back to revisit us.
Okay, Susan?
I hope there'll be improvements, but I sure hope we keep that philosophy of a public system going.
Okay, thank you both very much for your comments. This has been the Left, Right, and Center Wednesday edition of Talk of the Town. Thanks for everybody who phoned in this morning. Jim Chapman will be back in this chair tomorrow with his usual mix of left, right, and center opinions, I think. He hits them all most days. We're going to be talking more, of course, about Halo versus Haskett, the closing arguments happening down at the London Courthouse today. So thanks to Carolyn Ellis as well for holding down things on her side of the glass. I'm Dawn Kelly, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.